from the studios of 2RPH in Sydney. This is 30 Laps with Dick. I'm Richard Lyon. Welcome. Well, hey, the seven deadly sins. Who can name them? Who's experienced them? Who would like to? What's all this about? Well, not much. Seven deadly sins? Not today. Not on our charter. We're going to talk about the seven things you should do when buying a car. Much safer bet, I reckon. Let's be informed, not alarmed. We'll get all the answers on the show this week. Also, we'll drop in on Marcel Petitjean, see what he's got and what the motoring world wants. We'll have a recce there too. And let's also colour things up a dash. Famous vehicle livery, no less. Why is a Ferrari red? And why does that traditional Mini Cooper have a white roof? We're splashing with colour and looking under a Frenchman's hood this week at 30 Laps. Let's get on with the show. Seven things you must do or should do before buying a new car. And this comes from Drive magazine, or the online drive.co.nz, and our friendly team at Drive. See, I mucked that up. We better get on with it, hey? Seven things you should do when producing a radio program. Anyway, let's have a look. Think about this. Before you drop a few hundred bucks on a brand new TV, what do you do before going to the shops? Chances are you go online, scouting for deals, read a few reviews, compare models and prices, and generally arrive at the shop armed with an array of information before you've even gone near the brightest new OECD unit. Well, buying a car is no different, and since it's one of the most significant purchases you will probably make, it pays to make sure you're as ready as you can be. Here's a few healthy pointers. Number one, do your research. In an age where almost any piece of information is available to you via a device in your pocket, you're able to find out as much as you can about your next purchase from your couch. Gone are the days of kicking multiple tires. Whether you're uncertain about what you want or have your heart set on a particular model, do as much research as you can. It's not for show at the negotiating table, but it's to prove to yourself you're absolutely buying the right vehicle. So you're here at Car Advice. You are already in the best place to do the research. We have all the information on the car you're after, and have reviews dating back to 2006. And we welcome you to Car Advice to ask a question. If you have a specific need, we're here to help find the right car for you. Want to know whether the new Nissan can accommodate five people and luggage comfortably? Read and watch some reviews. Is the sound of the new Mustang important to you? Or scour the net for videos. Find out the extras you need and want and go in ready with that information to grab yourself the best deal. Look into the potential deals and break down the costs so you can use the information to negotiate when it comes time. Point number two, book a test drive. Now here's a big thing. Ask to take the car for 24 hours if you can, especially if it's a new car purchase and you're putting down a lot of money. It never hurts to ask, and you'll know exactly if it's the right car for you. Never just settle on a supervised lap of the block. Make sure you take the car yourself and test it in real-life situations for its intended purpose. Read about our test drive trips in drive.com.au. Book ahead and save your time and the dealer's. Ask what's needed for a test drive. It's usually license details and a signed waiver. And make sure you've got everything you need. Plus, a few days' notice for the dealer won't hurt. Plan your route. Take it home if you can, is point number three. Traffic will ruin the trip and even the nicest car in the world. So find out where the dealer is and look for quiet roads nearby that let you get acquainted with the car. Find some roads similar to the types you'll be using regularly and a few that offer different driving experiences. And ask the dealer for some tips. They're eager to sell you a car, so they'll know a few secrets. Best of all, if you can, take the car home, if only so you know it fits in your garage or your carport. You don't want to learn that one the hard way. Step four, I love this one. Don't be afraid to walk away. This isn't a negotiating technique. Those will come later. Just be ready to know, even if you've found the car of your dreams on paper, if you can't see safely out the rear window, for instance, then there's no point following through with the purchase. It's called a test for a reason, and if it doesn't work out, there's no shame in going back to square one and starting all over again. There are plenty of cars on the market, and there's probably one that's just right for you. Conversely, that also means there are many that are not. Point five. Have your finance ready. How you pay for it is none of our business, but make sure you've ticked all the right boxes before you begin. It would be a shame to commit to something you can't afford or miss a good deal because you're waiting for that loan to be approved. Do this early and have peace of mind. Point number six, be prepared to negotiate. It's not a competition, but there's no need to be hard-nosed these days. But look for ways to make the deal as the best that you can for yourself. Ask about options, on-roads, servicing deals, and anything where there's a cost. A few little discounts or no-cost add-ons can add up to some big savings. And finally, number seven, the most important of it all, enjoy the process. Cars are transport, but they're also fun. So take the chance to learn about what's available and to improve your own skills and knowledge while you're at it. That was from the Drive team at drive.com.au, not .co.au, as I mentioned at the start. And it was written by our good friend Anonymous. And it was part of the Drive team's analytics edition on the 21st of January, 2020. Jack, who wants to say it was written to you? Kind of love you back, knock me off my feet. Let it all hang out. Oh, let it all hang out. Yeah, you know, I'm so wild up. That'd be a good song to play on your tape deck or your CD player as you're driving down the road from the dealership. But we move on. We go to thismoney.co.uk, published on the 10th of March 2020, written by Rob Hull. One man's £8 million car collection up for grabs. A French ex-racing driver is selling almost 100 of his prized motors to the highest bidder this month. Frenchman Marcel Petitjean, who is an ex-racing driver, is offering 96 prized motors at one classic car sale. The auction takes place in Essen, Germany, March 26-27, with a collection offered without reserve. Included in the sale is a super rare 1958 Mercedes-Benz SL300 Roadster, with an estimated value of almost £1 million. The collection includes a 1968 Lamborghini Miura, great friend of ours on 30 laps, the P400, and a 64 Porsche, another great friend, 904 GTS, both worth over 700,000 quid each. You think you're struggling for garage space? One classic car collector is about to make room in his by selling a selection of his vehicles, almost 100 of them in fact. Frenchman Marcel Petitjean, who is a former racing driver, is offering 96 prize motors that he's amassed over the last 50 years to the highest bidder in a single auction later this month in Germany. This was written back in March, but as I'll tell you at the end of the story, the auction didn't take place until June because of COVID-19. Having hoped to create his very own museum, he has now decided to part ways with the jaw-dropping collection, which experts estimate to be worth a total of £8 million. Among the vehicles are several hugely collectible Lamborghinis, Maseratis and Aston Martins, with other famous names including Porsche, Alfa Romeo and Jaguar, also being put for the auction room. As it was initially planned to display the vehicles to the buying public, all of them are in pristine original condition and have spent their time with Petitjean before carefully being maintained in dry storage. Monsieur Petitjean, originally from Strasbourg, was a racing driver who competed in sports car and hill climb races around Europe in the 60s and 70s. His cars are now set to sell with auctioneers R.M. Sotheby's, who are expecting huge levels of interest from collectors. The most valuable lot in the collection is a 58 Mercedes-Benz, as we mentioned before, 300 SL Roadster, worth £1 million on its own. The silver convertible powered by a 2.9-litre straight six is one of just 30 examples delivered new with Rudge wheels, which makes it super desirable to well-heeled enthusiasts. The other highlight, or another highlight from the collection, is the 68 Lamborghini Miura P400. The Miura, considered by many to be the world's first supercar, certainly the most prettiest, I reckon, and has been owned by Petitjean for 40 years. Finished in a stunning giallo flay, yellow paint, it is predicted to fetch £700,000. For fans of Lambos from more recent eras, there's also immaculate examples of a 79 Countach LP400S and a 1991 Diablo, also in brazen tone of yellow. Another high-value motor is the 1964 Porsche 904 GTS, owned by Petitjean since 1991. Which is due to sell for somewhere around £780,000. If you fancy something a little different, there are also a couple of classic tractors with the framed sports car emblem. Remembering, folks, if you caught my show on Lamborghini, Mr. Lamborghini started life making tractors. Bright yellow ones with Hot Wheels. No, I'm not really sure what colour they were, but anyway. The collection has been brought together from all over Europe with a number of British cars set to appeal to potential buyers. Among the motors available are two Jaguar E-types, as well as classic examples from Lotus, Austin, Triumph, MG and TVR. The most valuable British-built model is an Aston Martin DB2-4 drophead coupe. The 1958 motor, which is a pale blue, is expected to sell for £175,000. It has a black folding roof and chrome wire wheels. Well, of course it does. They've even got a 1981 DeLorean DMC 12, and we know all about that one on this show. And it's got less than 8,000 miles on the clock and is also part of the collection going for sale. Mr. Petitjean started purchasing the finest motor cars he could in the late 1960s. Instead of making conservative investments in life insurance and mutual funds or real estate, he put all his money into the collection. though considered an unconventional strategy at the time, Petitjean's decision helped him to avoid the worldwide savings and loan scandal and the European debt crisis altogether. In the words of a parrot that I once had many years ago, who's a clever boy then? Mr. Petitjean occasionally drove the models he bought and has kept the collection of exotic cars near his home in Strasbourg. Some of the vehicles have not been driven for several years and will require recommissioning if owners plan to run them on the road. Every lot in the sale is being offered without reserve by RM Sotheby's, who are expecting the collection to raise up to 8 million quid. Oliver Camillon, a car specialist with the auctioneers, said, "We are pleased to bring these highly original European cars that represent Marcel Petitjean's passion for the hobby and many of which we have not seen in decades. Monsieur Petitjean has put together an incredibly diverse and yet focused collection with something for every kind of bidder, from desirable entry-level classics through to highly collectible staples of the market and quirky rarities. The collection is an exciting addition to our auction and we're thrilled to offer it entirely without reserve. We're inviting bidding from a range of suitors, whether they are seasoned collectors or first-time auction goers. The sale takes place over 2 days during the Techno Classica Essen Classic Motor Event held in the German city of Essen, March 26 and 27. So screaming ahead to the future, but before that, we thank Rob Hull from thisismoney.co.uk for his article that was finished and even published as well on the 10th of March 2020. So, as I said before, it was postponed and it ran between the 3rd and the 11th of June, about a week. There were 1,000 registered bidders and it turned out to be Sotheby's best ever online sale in the history of the organisation. Tell them the price, son. Well, the Mercedes-Benz that we talked about went for €159,000. That beautiful canary yellow Miura, €715,000. The Countach, the Lamborghini Countach, €451,000. And that wonderful Porsche GTS, €693,000, making for our friend Mr. Petitjean €7.3 million. Not bad for a week's work, hey? Crikey. Thank you, Mr. Van Morrison. That old redwood tree. And now for something completely different. Well, still got cars in the title, so hey, it still gets a spot on the show. But why cars and racing livery? Why is it the colours that it is or are? From Auto Car Magazine, 9th of April this year, most iconic car schemes in history. And it was written by Al Sutty. So let's have a look at what he's got to say. Let's start with British Racing Green. As motorsport became popular in the early part of the 20th century, national racing colours were adopted and Great Britain took on green. The reason for this stemmed from an international race held in Ireland in 1902. As Ireland was part of the United Kingdom at that time, green was chosen for the Napier cars out of respect for the Irish location. I bet you didn't know that. The light green changed in shade depending on which manufacturer was using it, and by the 1920s it had become a much darker colour. used by Bentley after the Second World War, Jaguar continued with a dark British racing green, while Aston Martin preferred a much lighter metallic hue for its DB racing models. Golf racing. In a world, golf, not the game golf, golf racing. Golf was an oil company. The boss probably plays golf, but that's probably as close as well. Anyway, I'm rambling. In a world where instant brand recognition is the holy grail, America's Gulf Oil had this sorted back in the 1960s. Its famous blue and orange livery quickly became synonymous with endurance motorsport success, especially at Le Mans, where the colours adorned its first Ford GT40 and then Porsche winners in the 24-hour event. However, the Gulf racing livery was derived from the Wiltshire Oil Company's palette. In the 1960s, Gulf's own dark blue and orange was considered too dull by the management to stand out on the track. So when the firm bought Wiltshire, it adopted its hue, and the rest is history. It's a history that includes the colours being used on the Ford, Mirage, McLaren, Aston and Porsche races. For those who don't know the colours, it's a sort of a duck egg blue and an orange. It does stick out. There's no doubt about that. Ha ha! Ferrari. Red and Ferrari is a classic combo, and it's been that way since the early days of the firm's racing activities. Over the years, though, the colour red has been open to interpretation by Ferrari, especially as colour television was introduced and the company wanted a red that stood out more on screen. It all started with Rosso Corsa, or Racing Red, which has been the basis for all factory race cars. With increased television coverage, this became a brighter, more orange hue, but in the 2007 Monaco Grand Prix, Ferrari made a return to the deeper original shade and has stuck with it ever since. The only deviations from this have been on the rare occasions the Formula One cars have supported black nose cones. Firstly, to mark the terrorist attacks of September 2001 and the death of John Pope Paul II in 2005. As those who listen or have listened to motor racing or watched it on television, you no longer hear dear old Murray Walker saying, and there he is accelerating away in his scarlet Ferrari. Anyway, back down to earth. The Audi Quattro. If the Audi Quattro was not enough of a sensation when it arrived on the scene in 1980, the rally version came with an equally standout paint scheme. Rather than being festooned with multiple sponsor stickers, Audi kept it simple, with a white base and red and black stripes on the bonnet, the hood and C-pillars. It certainly grabbed the attention and also clearly stated Audi's intention to put the Quattro front and centre in its bid to promote all-wheel drive as the future. Over time, the colour scheme was adapted to suit sponsors, with later rally cars sporting a yellow, broad yellow stripe down the flanks. However, the definitive colour scheme was back in 1988 for the stunning 200 Quattro Trans Am Racer. Alan Mann Fords, not so well known in Australia, however, in the UK, the Lotus Cortina became famous for its white and green design. The Alan Mann Racing Team had just made a big mark on the later Ford models. They included the GT40, Escort and Cortina, all finished in the firm's distinctive gold over red hues. Alan Mann, 1936 to 2012, also ran an aviation business alongside his motor racing team in the 60s and 70s. However, for unknown reason, he used a black, white and yellow livery for his helicopters rather than the red and gold he was famous for on the track. And we'll finish with the Ford Mustang Highland Green. Few films have ever had a greater influence on a single model of the car than the movie Bullet. And that had a huge effect on the Ford Mustang, as we know on this show. All the elements were there to catapult this car to stardom. From Steve McQueen as the lead actor and driver of the Ford to the superb car chase through San Francisco. Yet that subtle green metallic shade capped it perfectly. Demand for Mustangs and Highland Green rocketed after the movie hit the big screen. Though the GT390 Fastback used in the film remained a rare model. In 2001, Ford resurrected the colour for a special edition Bullitt model. It made more appearances in 2008 and 2009 and again last year in 2019. And that's where we might leave it this week, and we might have a look in the near future at some of the others, like the Lancia Delta, the Mazda 787, the Lotus GPS, the Lancia Stratos, the BMW CSL. We've got them all here, folks. It's interesting to know the histories as to why they were the colours that they were. So I hope you've enjoyed the show this afternoon. I've certainly, as usual, enjoyed very much bringing it to you. We talked briefly about the seven deadly sins, which segued quite nicely into the seven things we should do when we're buying a new vehicle or going with somebody who's buying a new vehicle. And we looked at that wonderful 100-car collection that netted our French motor racing driver 7.3 million euro. Not bad, hey? Oh, I forgot to mention, of course, that our cars, car colours came from Auto Car Magazine on the 9th of April this year, 2020, and it was written by Al Sutty. And we'll be, as I say, we'll be seeing the rest of that very shortly in another episode. I thought the comment was interesting during that show about the, or that article about the 100 vehicles, that he did it, he spent all his money on cars, where his mates went into property and shares, and a few of them obviously crashed during the ensuing years, and he's come out of it with nearly 7.5 million euro, so he was probably a pretty smart cookie all the way through. He was famous for hill climbs. If you don't know what a hill climb is, it's you start at the bottom and they time you as you go up the hill of various varying heights, and obviously the fastest one up the hill without rolling over is the winner. It's quite interesting stuff. It's quite dangerous and pretty spectacular. We have them in Australia, so if you see one advertised, go and check it out. It's a lot of fun. Thanks again for your time this afternoon, and I look forward to catching you next week with some more stuff, which we don't know what it is at this juncture, but I'll have a better idea when I produce it, bring it to you next week. Until then, bye for now.